So let's look a little bit at the materials. First, an overall explanation of the topic that we are starting now, introduction to system dynamics applied to information security. And there is access to our slides developing this. Then we will be able to do some exercises. And later I will, next week, upload solutions to exercises. They are not relevant for your examination project, since your examination project will be based on system archetypes. So that's why it's okay, I release that next week. And similarly to this. Among the things that we developed today is a model of the computer virus epidemic. So in principle, the files are already there. There is some explanation as to how to proceed with VenSim so as to separate the model files. And there will be some other exercises. So we will have lectures, group discussions, modeling exercises, and small projects today. So looking at the description, the document about system dynamics applied to information security. I am not going to read this in detail for you, just giving you the overview. But it is important that you read that because it situates the issue for you so that you can see. So what you can see here is that system dynamics, which is often abbreviated SD, it has been used in a lot of areas. If you want to find out in which areas it has been used, then you could enter systemdynamics.org, as you see here. And you get an overview as to what is system dynamics. This guy here is the founder of the field. He was a control engineer. He lives still, I think. His name is Jay Forrester. He's close to 100 years old, still going on. And next year, it will be the 50th anniversary of the launching of this discipline. So Jay Forrester, he was working as a control engineer, and during the Second World War, he was involved in the issues as to how to develop systems that will achieve goals. That was known as cybernetics and so on. And after the Second World War, he got interested in computers. He even invented some memory devices for computers, and because of that, he was in a board of a company that produced computers. And he noticed that managers, they were not thinking in terms of controls, they were had very static pictures. So he started introducing the ideas from control engineering in cybernetics to social systems, business systems, and so on, and it was the beginning of the system dynamics. So there you can see a lot. Description, what is system dynamics and so on. And if you explore this, you can learn quite much about that and also see many areas as to where system dynamics is used. It has been applied in a lot of areas. By the way, another thing that is also very important to be aware of is that you have access to a lot of information through VenSim Help. So if you open VenSim Help, this requires that you have installed VenSim PLE properly. Then especially the part modeling guide has a lot of information. It has a chapter introducing system dynamics. and there are things that I am going to cover today. So fundamental structures and behaviors, exponential growth, exponential decay, S-shaped growth oscillations, and so on. And then there are a number of projects, none of them about security, but all of them interesting if you want to expand your horizon and get conversant as to how to use Vensim. In all of them, you have a case, starting with very simple cases, and they tell you how to create a model, step for step. You can look at each of them. It's telling you how to do, so direct, how you produce a model, and you start being, have been taught as to how to create a model. There you will see new types of variables that you haven't seen before, and so on, how you simulate it. So the modeling guide in Vensim Health is a very, very useful source of information about how to create models and how to simulate them. And that's virtually worth a book. So I added some references to books, but we have also a lot of information in Vensim Health to the extent that maybe you don't need a book. Even if you wanted to buy a book, maybe the first thing you should do is this. Okay, back to that. Okay, but what I am going to do is, I have taught courses in system dynamics for different companies, including Statoil, BP, British Petroleum, British Telecom, and others. And I gave that in 3 days. And the course that I'm showing you is the same course that I have been giving for companies in Great Britain, in Germany, in Norway, and in Sweden. But I am not going to go through the whole course, but to selected areas. Also, I have rewritten the course so that it has examples, many examples from information security. What I recommend you in the course is these parts. The preface is recommended for completeness, not absolutely required, so I will skip it, but I recommend you to read that. Section 1 is recommended for completeness, but not absolutely required. So I am not going to give a lecture about that, but you should look into that. We will concentrate on sections 3 to 4, 6 to 13, 17 to 21. But again, if you want really to master the subject, you have to engage yourself. Practice, use it. And that means both doing the models, but also engaging in the forum question and answers, so as to exchange information, discuss things with others, and so on and so on. As to this of exercising, doing things. If you watch television and you see Sundby, eller Northug, eller Johaug skiing, then that's fun, but you don't get training yourself. You don't learn skiing, or you don't have a good you don't come in good sport shape by just watching television. So what do you have to do? You have to ski yourself. And I think Tonya likes to do that. Isn't that so, Tonya? Are you going to ski today? No. Today's too wet. But last Monday, Tonya went on skiing between the first session and the second session of this course. It's very good. Well, in terms of doing exercises, that's what is skiing, or let me say this. Watching television is like attending a lecture. Skiing yourself is doing the exercises. So that's what you need to do. Do the exercises yourself so that you master that. Then I mentioned a number of books. You see them here, additional literature. But I alert you that none of these books contain examples containing information security, but you will learn a lot about similar things that will help you. Otherwise, last week I gave you an overview of where system dynamics has been applied in security. So I refer to the overview for the course that I gave last week. If you want to find information in articles published in journals and conferences related to information security. Okay, so this is the course. So what are the goals of what we are going to do now, today, and in the next days as we are learning the method and learning about issues in security management at the same time? So we're doing two things: learning a tool that allows us to create models of information security, and learning about security management. So I will introduce two new kinds of variables called stock and flows that are required so that we can simulate. And we will use security as a real threat. And then we will learn in then sim a number of things that we need to create models, including as to how we compute the simulation, that's the called simulation algorithm, how to deal with time delays, that is processes that take long time to occur, and they are very common and very important. Some information as to how you transfer data to other applications. Some information as to how you could create user-friendly interfaces with NSIM, and so on. Actually, some of these issues are advanced, so I will only mention them and stay to the minimal things. I will also mention as to how you create models in groups with hexagons and impact diagrams. But then how do you verify that your model is the one that corresponds to the problem in case? How do you validate that the model is working as it should? How do you test it? And also you will learn a set of simple basic structures that you can use in many different respects. Okay, so the way I taught this course was over 3 days. And as you see here, the structures of the 3 days. Today, I will go to three levels and flows immediately. As I said, these two parts, you can do it for yourself. They are not so crucial. And then we will select here some topics as well. This is quite simple. We do that while we are learning. But this is important. This is important. This also, I will jump. I will don't take 14 and 15. And finally, this is a bit advanced. So I will not go into much detail in that, but you can look at this. But I will use some time on 18, 20, and 21. How much we cover today? About half of the course, and the rest we will cover in the last day of this, of the Security Management Dynamics course. Okay? So now, let's go to levels and flows. Which should be here, 18. Slide 18. That's where we start with the levels and the flows. And we will first define these concepts, give some examples, have a short exercise so that you can decide as to whether a variable is a level or a flow, about the units and how we compute levels. So as I mentioned, in 1957, the control engineer Jay Forrester, I showed you a picture of him, started a new discipline by applying concepts from engineering, control systems, cybernetics, to social systems, including management. And he recognized the tremendous importance of feedbacks. Feedbacks, represented in feedback loops, include actions that cause changes that in the end will increase or decrease the same action. If it increases, it's reinforcing. If it decreases, it's balancing. But at that time, we had computers. They were the first computers. And that allowed him to make these models computable. So it was a confluence of two things: the transfer of important insights for engineering to social sciences. And when you are dealing with security, you are also dealing with social sciences, actually a mixture of technology and social sciences, because they include people. And a good security is not achieved only by technology. And security management is by necessity something that involves people. So that's why system dynamics is very relevant, because it's a way to model complex systems that include technology and people and organizations. So that was the first step, transferring important insights from control engineering and cybernetics to social sciences. And second, the ability to simulate that using computers. Because without simulations, the models are too complex to understand what they are telling us. So we are always using models. So Tonya doesn't have Lillehammer in her head. She has a model of Lillehammer. And Henry, you don't have your family in your head. You have a model of your family. So they are representations, you know, about different entities, persons, and so on, and what they do, and their relations, and so on. And they are very rich in detail, these models, but it's difficult for you to tell what is going to happen over time with these models, how your family is going to develop, and so on, and how the relations will be, even if you have some understanding. So it's very difficult to predict exactly. But if you have models that you create with system dynamics, then the computer will tell you the consequences of these models over time. It will do things that we cannot do with our mind. But as I said before, the purpose of the models is not to create crystal balls so that you ask the model what is going to happen. Rather, the model should help your thinking so that you can plan better, make better decisions, and so on. Because a computer will never be able to represent all the things that are needed in our mind. Should be seen as a support rather than as a crystal ball. The history of system dynamics was changed a lot when computers were able to represent graphics. In the beginning, they were only had a text interface. But the moment you could have graphs and graphics and animations and curves and so on, then you had a big step. And the models that originally were developed with Dynamo, a text-based computer language, and run in mainframe computers, today they are run on PCs or Macs. And you have tools like VenSim or PowerSim that allow you to create graphical interfaces and create the models graphically. So as I said, next year it will be 50 years in the foundation of system dynamics, and it's hoped that Jay Forrester will be able to attend the International Conference on System Dynamics in Boston, or actually in Cambridge at MIT, where he was professor. And I hope to be there again. I know Jay Forrester, have met him several times in conferences and so on. One more thing. In 1989, Another professor of MIT, Peter Senge, who was a student of Jay Forrest in his time, he wrote a book, The Fifth Discipline, about learning organizations, where he introduced archetypes and causal loops and so on for the wide audience. That sold in millions, was very successful, and had a strong impact on popularizing system dynamics for a wide audience. Now, as to the things that you need to know in order to build a model. Whereas in system archetypes, we didn't distinguish between different types of variables, now we have to. If you want to simulate a model, you have to distinguish between different types of variables. The first important type of variables is the variables called stocks or levels. It can be a little bit confusing that both names are used. Originally, Jay Forrester called them stocks, but because they are, the metrics of a stock is the level in the stock, then more and more people call them levels. Anyhow, the stock or the level represents a pool of something, of some resources. It can be some materials, it can be the pool of incidents, the pool of event registered, anything, people, anything that can be aggregated and considered as a whole. Then you have another type of variable that was called flow by Forrester. It's also known as a rate, a name. And that is a presentation of a process. And this process will transfer something from some level to some other level. Here the levels are at the moment represented by clouds. I will tell you later why we have the symbol cloud there. But in principle, that's a process that transfers something from a level to another level. So that is, it will add, increase the amount in a level and decrease the amount in some other level where it comes from. Then you need other kind of variables that they are called auxiliary. In a sense, you could build model without auxiliaries, but then they have too little detail and they are difficult to understand. So we'll use the variables auxiliaries quite often. And the auxiliaries, a particular case of auxiliaries, they are those that don't change, they have constant values. In Jay Forrester's original notation, an auxiliary was represented by a circle, the level by a box, and the rate by such things like this. And constants, they were represented by squares. In Venzin, we have a minimum of symbols. The only symbols that appear are this and this, and both auxiliaries and constants are just represented by names with any graphical symbol at all. In a sense, when you build the system archetypes, you were using these symbols in Venzin for auxiliaries. Okay, this is just the first introduction. It will become clearer as we start adding detail in using them. Here's a nice metaphor. If you understand that, then you know a lot about the two kinds of the more fundamental variables, the levels and the rates. And remember, because people use both concepts, so we have stock or level, they say the same thing, and we have flow or rate, there are two names for the same thing. Kjære barn har mange navn, we say in Norwegian, dear children have many names. So in system dynamics, we have two children, and they have two names each. So stock or level, flow or rate. So the metaphor is, consider a stock as a container, like a bathtub. And if you want to know how much is in the stock, you just look at the level of the water. So that's the reason. The stock is the bathtub, the container, and the level is how much that is in the container. And they represent the states of some system in terms of the system resources. When we start doing exercise or see an example, this becomes clearer. The flows are the processes that fill in or take water away. So the faucet to fill the bathtub and the drain for which you empty that. Now you can see the metaphor. If the stock represents the number of incidents waiting to be analyzed in an incident reporting system, then the faucet is the incidents being reported, and the drain, they are the incidents that are passed to be analyzed. So this, the stock is incidents that have been reported but not yet analyzed, for instance. And the faucet is the number of incidents that are being reported and filling in, adding more, where the drain is that incidents that are passing to the next stage for the analysis. For example. And so on. We will see several examples soon. So, here is what I announced, but now in the symbols of system dynamics. We have a stock, pending incidents inventory. Pending means they are there waiting for something to happen to them. And this stock is increased by a flow, the incidents reported, and decreased by the incidents that are processed. This is already a model. Where do the incidents come that have been detected? We put a cloud if we don't care. And similarly, if the incidents process goes somewhere and don't care about that, you put a cloud. What does this mean? That means that in this model, we don't look closely as to this information. It doesn't mean that this information is unimportant or is not existing. The point is, for this model that I am pointing here, I only care about the pending incidents inventory, the process of reporting, and the process of processing, and that I don't ask more questions. This is just an example. I'm not saying that this model is useful. I'm concentrating on the stock, and what increases the stock, the incidents reported, and what decreases the stock, the incidents processed, because then there are no more pending incidents. They are something else. And here below, you see the explanations. Again, I use the terminology stock, here it's level. Instead of that, and this is a flow or a rate, if you like. But then, what are the units? Well, in the pending incident inventories, you count the number, how many incidents are there that are awaiting for being processed in some way. In the two flows, the units is incidents reported per time unit. And whatever the time unit is a matter of convenience. It doesn't matter fundamentally whether you measure that in weeks or days or hours. It's a question of convenience. Choosing the right time unit makes the number easier to understand. So if you measure the incidents per second, then you will get probably numbers that are 0.0 something. They are difficult to understand. If you measure the incidents per century, then you get huge numbers, but they are very little user-friendly because they are relating to very big time spaces. So one of the points in building a good model is to choose the unit of time so that you have to do with numbers that are intuitively easy to understand. Any questions? So, a little example. Here we have a list of level and rates. Look at the screen and let's go through that. What is the incident inventory? Is it a level or a flow? It's a level. And what is incidents reported, a level or a flow? A flow. Because that's the process that adds to the incidents in the inventory. So it's incident reported will be so and so many incidents per time unit. So the incidents reported end up in the level. So you could see the inventory is the total of incidents reported so far, but not yet processed. Employees in a company, is this a level or a flow? It's a level. New hires, that is people being hired, is this a level or a flow? It's a flow. Population in Lillehammer, level or flow? Level. Attrition, what does attrition mean? Attrition is a term for the number of people leaving some pool. For instance, in a company, those that are leaving because they retire or because they lose the job. Is this a level or a flow? Which is the best way of describing that? It's a flow. It's the best. Because you described in terms how many people that are leaving per month or per week or per year. Your net income, that's what you get every month and so on. It's a level or a flow? It's a flow, because that's you earn so and so much per month. Revenue is the income of a company, so it's a flow. Your debt, is it a level or a flow? You have, say you have bought a house, and your debt is, say, 2 million crowns. Flow or level? It's a level, yes. Your assets. Assets is mostly used for companies. That's the total of the values that the company has. A level. Your cash. Level. Your cash flow. No. In terms of capacity, capacity is used to describe, for instance, in a company, the plants that can do something, but it can be also described by the production capacity of that. Would you describe that as a level or as a flow? It's better as a level, yes. Then we enter the area of short variables. They are very, very important. The morale in organization or in a team, say a handball team, even if it's difficult to measure, is extremely important. Is this a level or a flow? It's better to present as a level, yes. The number of vulnerable hosts in a network, level or flow? Level. The number of hosts that have been secured, the vulnerabilities have been removed, level. The activity of patching vulnerable hosts, level or flow? Flow, yes. And in the end, you have even suggested units. So Incidence inventory is measured by the number of incidents, incidents reported by incidents per week, employees by number of employees, new hires, employees per year or per month or whatever is better, population in Lillehammer, number of people, attrition, the number of employees leaving per time unit, month or year, whatever, net incomes you will measure in some currency per some unit of time, month or year, revenue for the company similarly, the debt, currency, your assets, currency, your cash, currency, cash flow, currency per time unit. Capacity is a level, but sometimes it's convenient to represent that in the amount of products that can be produced per some unit of time. So you will see that in the case of flows, it's always some unit per some time unit. For level, it can be some unit per time unit and still be a level. I'll come back to that later. As to morale, you will need some unit to measure that. For instance, the stress index. If the stress is very low, morale is high or whatever. Or morale index. Vulnerable host and hardened host, the number of hosts that represent that quality. Whereas patching could be the number of hosts that are hardened by removing vulnerabilities per some unit of time. This exercise is quite convenient to do, so you should repeat it for yourself once more later. And if you have questions, then you can ask the questions. I will answer that, or Konstantin will, using the forum. Here are some criteria that help you determine what is a level. Consider again the level by the metaphor of the bathtub. Then, a level can never change instantly. So, how does the level of water in the bathtub change? Because of the flows. So the flows change the levels, but you cannot change them by any way else. The levels contain all the information that is needed for the system. If you have know the values of the levels, then you have all you need to describe the system. And everything else depends on what is in the levels. If you make a screenshot, stopping the time, then you can count how much is in the level. For instance, examples, an inventory of incidents never appears or disappears silently. It enters or leaves through incidents reported or leaves processes. And if you have information about the incidents, you can compute resources that you need and so on, how much your organization is affected. If you stop the time, you can count the number of incidents in an inventory, but you cannot count the flow, how many incidents that are coming in or out. Again, if you look at the bathtub picture, you can see how much water that is in the system, but from the picture you cannot tell how much water that is coming in and how much water that is going out. Because to find out the flow, you need to compare to now with later. So you have to, the flow is always measured by some change over time. Whereas what is in the level, you can take a screenshot, freeze the time and say that much. So if I ask you, what is your debt now? You can immediately tell me. But if I, can you stop the time and tell me how much your interest rates are changing and so on, you cannot. You have to compare with some time unit. So you can't compute the rate of interest in a year or per month or per day, but you have to, you cannot do that while freezing the time. Okay? So the question, when is element is a flow? Always in relation to a level. A flow always relates to some level, and it is a process that will either add, increase a level, or decrease a level. So the units of a flow also known as RAID, are always the units of the level divided by some time unit. Always, always, always. So here you see an example. Is this a correct model? Or this is a correct model? Well, by looking at the information in the units, you should be able to decide what is correct. So this is measured in incidents. This is measured in incidents per unit of time. That's okay. But a reporting campaign, how is this? That doesn't fit. That doesn't add incidents to that. But here's a better model. The reporting campaign in the organization can increase the motivation to report. The motivation to report can lead that the people or staff reports incidents, and that adds to that. So this is model is wrong, because this part doesn't make sense. But this is correct. Now, I mentioned that we can have very rich models in our heads about everything, about companies, about families, about Norway, about football, skiing, all kind of things. But it is very difficult to predict, using these models, what will happen over time. And I can give you a very simple example. Consider the following. Vulnerabilities in software occur when people are making mistakes in coding, in writing the program, the software. Assume that the number of bug codes behaves like this. This is the unit of time, 1, 2, 3, say, per hour. And in the first hour, 2 bugs are codes. In the next hour, 2 more. In the next hour, 2 more. Then for the next hour, no bugs. And then for the next 2 hours, 1 bug. How does the number of vulnerabilities behave? Assuming that you have C here. Try to figure out that intuitively. This is a very simple model. Very, very simple. So I am asking you, draw a curve here intuitively, representing this. And now you see, even this simple exercise, it is very simple. It's hard to do intuitively. You have to stop and draw and think. And it has been done exercises, even at MIT, with master students, and they are quite clever guys. Most of them intuitively make mistakes here. Mathematically, it shouldn't be a big problem. But if you ask them to quickly draw the behavior of vulnerabilities from the information that you got here, a lot of people make mistakes. Okay, I'm going to explain it, even though I'm not drawing. We have originally 0. We are getting 2 codes in the first hour, so after 1 hour, we must be here. 2 more in the next hour, so we must be at 4. 2 more in the next hour, then we must be at 6. Then nothing more happens for the next 2 hours, so we stay at 6, at 6. And then 1 more in the next hour, so we are at 7. And then 1 more in the next hour, then we are at 8. So that is the result. But intuitively, seeing this and immediately doing this, we cannot do. Our mind, that is powerful in all kinds of respects, has not been developed by evolution to think in terms of changes and what happens over time. That's a big weakness of our mind. It wasn't important while we were hunters and gatherers, and maybe as we were farmers. But in the modern world, where you have very complex systems that we need to understand, our lack of intuition is a problem. It is not a problem if we understand.